Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 29 degrees. It's a beautiful day. Mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, the high near 37, they're saying. Northwest wind 5 miles per hour, should become calm this afternoon. Mostly clear skies tonight for stargazing and whatever elsing. Low around 29 overnight tonight, so we're there already. Northwest winds to 10 miles per hour. Sunny skies tomorrow too, with a high near 37. Northwest winds to 5, becoming calm. So if you like that kind of weather. Coming up on the Midday News, Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported increasingly shrinking cases of COVID-19 in Kodiak. The U.S. Coast Guard and Russia's Marine Rescue Service will be cooperating. We'll tell you why. Climate scientists say big rain is coming to southeast and western Alaska. Eric Stone has a report on that. And in Fairbanks, a 28-year-old cold case comes back to life. That and more after national headlines.
PR News, I'm Barbara Klein. Nationwide hospitalizations for COVID-19 have fallen below 100,000 for the first time since July. Though at more than 92,000, they're still far higher than they were earlier in the pandemic. The latest daily number of newly confirmed cases is also down to 110,000. But at a White House briefing today, warnings were sounded about Sunday Super Bowl, as NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says infections and COVID-19 hospitalizations are declining, but cases remain extraordinarily high. As for Super Bowl Sunday, a time when people normally gather with friends to watch the big game, Walensky said not to do that this year.
Whichever team you're rooting for and whichever commercial is your favorite, please watch the Super Bowl safely. Gathering only virtually or with the people you live with.
She says contact tracing on cases of the new COVID variants shows that not wearing masks and participating in in-person social gatherings have contributed to the spread. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The Biden administration and Senate Democrats met at the White House today to move forward with a nearly $2 trillion coronavirus relief bill. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports congressional Republicans continue to balk at the price tag and have countered with a much smaller bill.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says if Republicans are not willing to take a bold approach, Democrats are prepared to move forward without them.
We will not repeat the mistakes of the past. Our goal is simple: to help the American people and the American economy, and do it fast.
President Biden reiterated his push for $1,400 in direct payments, adding that he's not going to start his administration by breaking a promise to the American people. Republicans continue to push for the checks to be more targeted to those below a certain income threshold. Additional aid for state and local governments is another major sticking point in talks. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The House has scheduled a vote tomorrow on a resolution to strip Georgia Republican freshman Marjorie Taylor Greene of her assignments to the Education and Budget Committees. The move is in response to Greene's repeated promotion of QAnon conspiracy theories and other misinformation, including claims that there's no evidence of a 9/11 attack on the Pentagon. The Justice Department says it's dropping its discrimination lawsuit against Yale University. The Trump administration last year accused Yale of illegally discriminating against Asian American and white undergraduate applicants. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization has reported one new community transmission COVID-19 case for the Kodiak Island Borough. This brings the total case count to 1,045 since the start of the pandemic, with 17 cases classified as active locally. To date, there have been 42 hospitalizations and 5 deaths associated with COVID-19 on Kodiak. There are no active cases currently hospitalized locally. The U.S. Coast Guard and Russia's Marine Rescue Service have signed on to a joint plan to combat pollution in the Bering and Chukchi Seas, according to a press release from the Coast Guard's Alaska District. On February 21st, Acting Director of Russia's Marine Rescue Service, Andrei Koskov, and the Coast Guard's Deputy Commandant for Operations, Vice Admiral Scott Bushman, signed the 2020 update to the Joint Contingency Plan, a bilateral agreement on a combined response to pollution incidents in waters between the U.S. and Russia. This updated version of the plan, titled The Joint Contingency Plan of the United States of America and Russian Federation in Combating Pollution in the Bering and Chukchi Seas, outlines a system for the planning, preparation, and responding to the pollutant spills in shared waters, with a particular focus on communication and coordination between the two organizations. Such coordination is of particular importance in the transboundary waters, which are well known for severe weather and limited resources with which to respond to pollution. Climate scientists say a warming planet is likely to make big rainstorms in southeast and western Alaska more common. And as Eric Stone reports from Alaska's energy desk in Ketchikan, rising temperatures are also forcing researchers to consider just how much rain a storm can drop.
Researchers project that storms that used to come around once every 20 years or so could start to occur every 5 to 10 years in southeast Alaska or every 3 years in western Alaska. But what is a 20-year storm? Jeremy Littell is a United States Geological Survey researcher who works with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy. Let's say you look out your window and you see sheets of rain coming down. You say to yourself, wow, that's quite a rainstorm.
If your neighbors are saying, wow, that's also impressive, and they've lived there a long time, then probably you're approaching that 1 in 20 years.
For a more concrete example, think back to the late November and early December storm that triggered flood warnings and threatened to damage a dam upstream of downtown Ketchikan. That storm dumped 19.9 inches of rain in 7 days, making it roughly a 20-year event. Littell projects that as the Earth warms, storms like that could happen every 5 to 10 years. But Littell says that's not the whole story.
So the game changer is that while we were focused on the 1 in 20-year event, which was previously kind of our definition of extreme, the definition of what is possible was also changing.
As storms that were once thought of as extreme become more common, storms that are thought of as impossible, or at least extremely unlikely, start to become very real concerns.
It can lead us into a false sense of security by saying, oh, well, okay, we can plan for 1 in 4 instead of 1 in 20. That's okay. But you're not thinking about 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000. You know, those are no longer 1 in 1,000. Whether they're 1 in 100 or 1 in 500 or 1 in 20, nobody really knows for certain yet.
Take the rainfall that triggered a deadly landslide in Haines in December. That was even more out of the ordinary, a 200 to 500-year storm over 2 days. Littell says scientists expect those will also become more likely, though they're not sure just how much more likely. In any case, though, Littell says the rising chance of severe precipitation, rain, and snow should be on state and local officials' minds when thinking about things like public works projects and building codes.
All of our built environment is affected by those kinds of assumptions, and the codes that we relied on in the past may not be sufficient for the extreme events that we could expect to encounter in the future.
Just how much more common these 20-year storms become depends on how much warmer the planet gets, and that depends on what's done to curb greenhouse gas emissions, among other things. But Littell says it pays to prepare for a warmer future, even if the United Nations' most dire predictions of an 8-degree Fahrenheit rise in global temperatures by 2100 don't come to fruition.
In that case, you came out ahead, even if you invested quite a bit on the front end. But if you plan for that lower warming future and you get the higher warming future and didn't plan for it, then those consequences might be quite a bit more impactful.
Just like in any natural disaster, it's better to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
Most courts proceedings in the state of Alaska are still on hold due to the COVID-19 pandemic. However, one criminal trial in Fairbanks is proceeding through the preliminary steps. As KUAC's Robin reports, a Fairbanks judge is hearing motions for a murder suspect in a 28-year-old cold case.
20-year-old Sophie Sergey was found dead in a dormitory at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in 1993. Her case went cold for many years as suspect after suspect was ruled out. However, in 2018, DNA from the crime scene was matched through a commercial database to a former student who had moved back to Maine. Alaska state troopers went to Maine to arrest him in February 2019. After a months-long trip to extradite him to Fairbanks, Stephen Downs has been waiting for his day in court. His attorney, James Hawanek, is glad the evidentiary hearing has started this week.
It's been pushed off for a year now. This was already going to be a tough case, and then we get hit with the pandemic. And so we had a conference with the judge 2-3 months ago, and we just decided we're going to get going on some of these motions pending for a year.
Hawanek and his law partners have filed 11 motions in the case that Judge Thomas Temple began hearing on Tuesday.
Well, we've been litigating the first 2 days, and now we're going into a third day, is the motion to suppress evidence.
Downs was an 18-year-old freshman living in the same dormitory at University of Alaska Fairbanks where Sergey's body was found. She had been stabbed, raped, and shot. Downs' roommate at the time told troopers Downs owned a .22-caliber revolver that is believed to be the gun used to shoot Sergey. During a search of Downs' home in Auburn, Maine in 2019, troopers found a gun matching that description. Downs told investigators he had purchased the gun in 2016 from a private owner in Maine. Hawanek wants the DNA evidence and the gun removed from the case.
We really want to get to our motion to exclude evidence of the gun that was seized from Stephen's house in Auburn. It's just simply not the gun that committed the crime, and we hope to have an opportunity to establish that.
One other motion is very important to Downs' defense, the idea that someone else killed Sophie Sergey.
Sophie was last seen about 1 o'clock to 1:30 a.m. that Monday morning, April 26, 1993, and this individual was seen coming out of the girls' bathroom, the women's bathroom, at that time, and then he subsequently confessed to his sister that he killed Sophie.
Judge Temple will hear more motions today. Downs is charged with murder in the first degree and sexual assault in the first degree. If his case is not dismissed, he's scheduled for a Fairbanks trial on March 8th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Quintillion and GCI recently announced a partnership that will provide faster internet speeds to residents in Nome and Kotzebue. These services will make the rural hub similar to urban cities and potentially reduce the digital divide for Western Alaskans. Heather Handyside, a spokesperson for GCI, says having 1 gigabit internet speeds this far north is a game changer for rural Alaskans.
And the kinds of speed that we are bringing to these communities are urban speeds, not just urban Alaskan speeds, but speeds you would get in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. These are the fastest speeds that are available to consumers anywhere in the nation. So it's really putting Alaska ahead.
Currently, residents in Nome and Kotzebue already have access to unlimited bandwidth internet through local providers that are connected to Quintillion's fiber, but those speeds are significantly lower than 1 gigabit services. They only come with roughly 25 megabit service speeds. 1 gigabit internet runs at about 940 megabits, according to the telecommunications companies. Both Handyside and Chief Revenue Officer for Quintillion, Michael McHale, agree that this new partnership is focused on the consumers.
I think having multiple competitors in a market with different types of infrastructure that are, you know, both capable of delivering a great service should create an environment of innovation for everybody. And who benefits from that ultimately is the consumer. That is the mission.
According to the press release from both companies, in addition to improved internet service, The new partnership will bring Internet Protocol Television, or IPTV, services and support GCI's ongoing upgrade to 4G LTE wireless service. However, this opportunity is not being extended beyond Nome and Kotzebue, not yet. The rest of the Bering Strait region continues to struggle with connectivity issues, as one resident in Teller illustrated in the fall of 2020.
Because it's not only broadband, it's cell phone service, landline services. We pay an extremely high price in the villages. We're paying monthly bills of $150 to over $300 for only two lines of cell phone, and they don't even work in our homes. And even our workplaces don't have internet or computers.
According to Quintillions McHale, the company is working with Bering Straits Native Corporation on a potential solution for poor internet in villages. They recently applied for a grant so Quintillion can build out their existing internet infrastructure to other regional communities.
You know, hopefully we'll get the nod on that and we'll win that grant. We'll be able to, you know, then take our cable landing station and the fiber optics that's in Nome today and expand out 65, 70 miles to the east into the White Mountain region and, you know, further leverage that infrastructure for additional markets as well.
McHale says negotiations between Quintillion and GCI started before the coronavirus pandemic arrived, but the companies admit that COVID-19 has certainly highlighted the need for better connectivity in rural Alaska. Having the option for 1 gigabit internet speeds in Nome and Kotzebue makes the two cities the northernmost locations in the country with this specific service. Handyside said specific packages and offerings for GCI customers with this new service has not been finalized yet, but more information will be coming in the next couple of months, along with technical crews who will be installing and upgrading the necessary equipment in Nome. Alaska's subsistence councils are entering the new year at reduced strength. They have been hamstrung by a pattern of stalled appointments that have left few members ahead of the 2021 meetings. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the federal councils are important to Alaskans who hunt and fish to feed themselves and to preserve their way of life.
Rural Alaskans enjoy hunting and fishing privileges on federal lands to sustain their way of life. The decisions for opening and closing hunting grounds and setting harvest limits are largely made by the more than 100 Alaskans who sit on 10 regional councils.
They're the ones that are on the ground and making these observations based upon a lifetime of experience and the experience of their elders and the traditions in their communities.
Jim Fall was the state's head of subsistence research. He recently retired from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game after nearly 40 years of service, and he's been to a lot of these meetings.
They basically go around the room when they start their meetings, and the representatives talk about observations that they've made about fish and wildlife populations and stocks, or about subsistence uses, or about conditions in their communities, observations that they've made, or things that they're hearing in their communities.
But this year, there are going to be fewer voices at the table. That's because more than half of the seats are now unfilled. It's not due to lack of interest. The Federal Office of Subsistence Management says it dutifully forwarded enough names last September to the U.S. Interior Secretary. But many of them, even long-serving members, didn't make it through to the other side. Don Hernandez was one of them.
We don't even know who to call.
He's a longtime chair of Southeast Regional Advisory Council. There can be up to 13 members. Now they're down to 5.
That's just not a real good representation for all of the different issues that we have here in Southeast Alaska. So it's going to be really tough to get anything done at this next meeting, I'm afraid.
Jack Rieckhoff lives in remote Wiseman, a former mining camp roughly halfway between Fairbanks and Prudhoe Bay. He was a longtime chair of the Western Interior Regional Council that stretches from Aniak on the Kuskokwim River to the Brooks Range.
It's a huge area. It's like multiple states. We need 10 members to manage that area. And they kept taking people away from us.
They're also down to just 5 members.
They're going to be completely overwhelmed. I would be overwhelmed if it was myself and the leadership of our council. They're going to be completely overwhelmed for this meeting.
Who is responsible for this isn't clear, a Trump administration executive order signed in mid-2019, directed agencies to reduce or eliminate advisory committees considered obsolete, duplicative, or expensive. But what is clear is that the Trump administration's interior secretary chose not to fill 35 seats late last year. The recent change in presidential administrations has added yet another layer of uncertainty, with people in the agencies scrambling for answers. The Office of Subsistence Management is soliciting nominations now, but it's a year-long process, and applicants who file by the February 15th deadline likely won't be seated until 2022. Federal subsistence rights are enshrined by ANILCA, and that's a landmark legislation signed by President Carter that expanded national parks and monuments in Alaska, but also guarantees Alaskans have real decision-making authority over their rights on federal lands.
The regional advisory councils are kind of the linchpin of the whole system.
That's Don Hernandez again from Prince of Wales Island.
And pretty much the whole system revolves around the advisory councils making their recommendations to the board. And so having, you know, good functioning, well-qualified advisory councils is the key to make all subsistence system work in Alaska.
But whether the lack of appointments is due to bureaucratic inefficiencies, the outcome will be the same. Less input on federal wildlife management decisions by the people whose lifestyle and livelihood depend on it. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
After nearly a year-long shutdown of Alaska's government spending database, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration says it plans to bring it back online later this week. The checkbook online system went dark nearly a year ago, leaving the public largely blind to details about state spending, even as Alaska faces a huge budget shortfall. Dunleavy's administration said the system lacked what it called internal controls, assurance measures, and auditing. The shutdown left Alaskans without information about how executive branch agencies and the legislature were spending money on contracts and services. Now the corrected system is in its final testing phase and is expected back online by Friday. That's according to a statement by the Department of Administration, which maintains the database. There's no law requiring the system to be in place, but a proposed bill to do that got its first hearing on Tuesday. It's from Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wilichowski and will also feature and add new features that aren't available in the old system, like spending by state university system and by state corporations. The proposal appears to enjoy bipartisan support. At the hearing, Eagle River Republican Senator Laura Reinbolt said she's a big fan of the checkbook system since it helped her find proposals to trim the budget.
This is a super important bill, and I'm probably going to become a co-sponsor of it. If you talk about saving money, I can tell you I generated dozens and dozens of cuts based on what I saw in this online checkbook.
Creating the new system would cost $400,000, Dunleavy's administration says.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Apply now to learn the fishing life. More on a crew training program after this.
Seafood Auction says thanks to longline fishermen and seafood buyers for a successful 2020 season and looks forward to working together again in 2021. Learn more at seafoodauction.net.
The call is out to apply for crew training for those who want to learn firsthand the fishing life. It's the fourth year that the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka has hosted the program, which has drawn over 120 applicants each year. So far, it's brought aboard nearly 35 new boots on deck by more than 25 skippers. 64 more have gotten advance onshore training.
traditionally, a lot of our apprentices or crew member trainers are on longliners and trollers, but we do offer like a shorter term experience, maybe on a gillnetter or a seiner, maybe just for a day or even a week, or just see how that goes. And I know last year we actually did have a couple recent high school graduates. They went out on a tender.
Natalie Sattler is Program and Communications Director for ALFA and its Alaska Sustainable Fisheries Trust. Funding for the program comes from the National Wildlife Federation and Alaska Community Foundation Workforce Development. And while it attracts interest in the U.S. and globally, a priority is recruiting young Alaskans, especially from rural regions.
We have shared a lot of our resources and tools with other organizations. Recently, I've been speaking with folks in Bristol Bay who want to start something up. We've shared our resources with Sea Grant.
Sattler says many crew members return each year to fish with the same skippers. One is troller Eric Jordan aboard his troller, the Igotta.
Finding crew with some experience is so critical to the future of the industry as a whole. So it's a win-win for both the crew members and the skippers.
The fishing apprentices are paid for their work. The minimum age is 18, and deadline to apply for the deckhand training program is March 1st. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the third day of February, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 9:07. It won't set again until 5:42 this afternoon, giving us 8 hours and 34 minutes of daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 31 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 12 noon here on the east side, 11:59 a.m. That will be a 1.24-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 5:59 at 6 p.m. of 6.81 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:55 p.m., nearly midnight, of 1.22 feet, and your next high tide will be at 6:30 a.m. here on the east side of 8.7 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 12:32 this afternoon of 1.47 feet, followed by a high tide at 6:32 p.m. of 12.83 feet. Your next low tide on the west side will be at 12:39 a.m., just after midnight, of 2 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:52 a.m. and be 14.69 feet. 33 degrees here in beautiful downtown Kodiak. Mostly sunny skies and clear skies tonight. Low around 29. Light northwest winds are expected to become calm this evening. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 37. Northwest wind to 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the morning. So pretty nice weather coming up, if a little chilly. Should be nice stargazing. Maybe the northern lights will come out tonight. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 1,001 millibar low, 120 nautical miles south of Middleton Island, will move to 80 nautical miles south of Yakutat and go to 1,003 millibars on Wednesday afternoon before moving inland across the Panhandle Thursday morning. As a result, Marmot Island to Sitka, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory today. North wind 15 knots right now, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, west wind to 15 knots, seas to 7 feet. And for Thursday, variable 10, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side, northwest 15 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, west 20, seas to 5 feet. And for Thursday, variable winds to 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, northwest 15 right now, becoming variable less than 10 this afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, northwest 10 right now, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas 2 feet. Here are some meetings coming up over the Kodiak Island Borough. The Solid Waste Advisory regular board meeting is happening tonight at 5:15 p.m. That's happening via teleconference, and you'll want to go to the borough website to find the link to participate. Tomorrow, the assembly is having their regular meeting, also via teleconference. Again, go to the borough website, Kodiak Island Borough website, to find the link. Next Tuesday, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 is having their board meeting at the Bayside Fire Station. That's happening at 6 p.m. next Tuesday. Island Trails Network's Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is back. Your Kodiak Outdoor Adventure Film submissions are due by March 5th for the March 12th Kodiak Fairgrounds Drive-In Film Festival. Films can be dropped off on a thumb drive at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Salmon Reception Desk. You can contact Philip with questions or to meet you at the door. That number is 486-1871. You can also visit islandtrails.org/film. That's islandtrails.org/film. For complete guidelines. The Kodiak City Council will hold a planning session on Saturday. The meeting will happen at 9 a.m. Public participation for the meeting will be virtual. It will be streamed live, though, and you can find that link at the City of Kodiak website. For questions and to request printed meeting materials, call the clerk's office at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.